Hi, I'm Carmen LaBurge. Thanks for listening to the podcast of Mornings with Carmen LaBurge.
Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting.
Good morning. Welcome to Mornings with Carmen. I don't know, a shout out to everybody in Bismarck where it's 18 below. Duluth, you're at 2 below. I feel like you should be feeling kind of, you know, jazzed and superior this morning. All right, good morning, good morning, good morning to everybody who's listening on the Faith Radio Network, to everyone who is listening via the stream at myfaithradio.com, and all of you listening on the Faith Radio app on all of your enabled devices. We love that you are listening today. I'm looking forward to talking with you this morning, having a cup of coffee, and surveying the headline news of the day. But before we get to all of that, let me just remind us, the very nature of the universe is the gospel. And so the very nature of the gospel is good news. And that good news is great joy for all people. Let us not forget that, even as we are living in the midst of headline news and stories that don't seem always terribly redemptive. That's our role and responsibility, actually, as God's people deployed in the world today as ambassadors of the kingdom. You and I bring God's perspective to bear on whatever is happening. God has a plan. The entire arc of history is redemptive. And you and I live in a gospel universe. Let's remember that as we live in the midst of whatever circumstances we are confronting in this day. God is the creator who makes of us a new creation in Jesus Christ, and he is the one who has planned a great, grand new creation in the fullness of time. You and I live in the meantime, and in the meantime, we seek to be faithful, beautiful witnesses of the fullness of the beauty and truth of God's gospel. So let us then live with hope and joy and great expectation in this day. A lot has happened in the week since we last spoke with Tommy Binion from Heritage. So next up, we're going to discuss the national emergency declaration on the southern border, the developing D.C. drama exposing discussions by some FBI and DOJ officials to unseat the president, an election 2020 preview as Bernie Sanders just announced his candidacy for the 2020 Democratic primary on Vermont's public radio this morning. All of that next and more on Mornings with Carmen.
I'm just a bill. Yes, I'm only a bill. And I'm sitting here on Capitol Hill. Well, it's a long
Tommy, welcome back to Mornings with Carmen.
Good morning. Great to be back.
So you guys have a lot posted at heritage.org right now. Before I let you talk about the really cool thing that I saw there this morning, which is the 2019 assessment of our military. I thought that was kind of cool. Let's talk about the 16 state attorney generals, including Minnesota, who are now opposing the president's declaration of a national emergency on the southern border. Remind everyone how we got here.
Well, we have a president who ran for president on the campaign of building a wall. He got to Washington, and frankly, a Republican-led Congress, Republicans in the majority in both the House and Senate, failed to get that done. They failed to authorize enough funding for the president to build a wall. At the end of those 2 years, the president put his foot down, and he said he would not accept another funding bill without adequate funding for the wall. At that time, Democrats were about to take over the majority of the U.S. House, and Congress didn't give them a bill. And so the government shut down for 35 days. After 35 days of, you know, a partial government shutdown, the president and the Congress agreed to a three-week sort of stalemate, a three-week ceasefire. They opened the government back up, and they were going to negotiate a deal. Well, they negotiated a deal, but it was not adequate wall funding. It had some in there, but not very much, about $1.3 billion. So the president announced on Friday morning his intention to use several different types of executive authority to get more funding for the wall, about $8 billion in total. One of those requires a declaration of a national emergency, and all of this is clear in the statute. This is not unprecedented action. He can do this, but I'll say he shouldn't have had to. The Congress should have had a deliberation, had a debate on the merits of this particular method of border security, and what they had was a political game where Democrats were trying to deny the president something he had promised in his election, that there was no discussion of the merits of the wall. So I think we're in a really unfortunate state here, but the president has declared a national emergency, something which anybody reading the statute would clearly conclude is well within his authority. But I do think it is an unfortunate reality.
So help us understand what a national emergency is as defined by the law. Because it's my understanding we've got like three dozen of them in place right now.
Right. There are well over 30 in place. A national declaration of emergency, it's not as special as it sounds.
Right. And it's not even really as national as it sounds, nor as emergency as it sounds.
Right. In this case, there's a statute governing military construction. So one of the big things the government does on an annual basis are military construction projects at bases or the construction of new bases. And it says in the event that the president declares a national emergency, these funds can be reprogrammed to other construction efforts. Pretty clear that there is a crisis on the southern border. The president has declared a national emergency. All that that is a simple declaration. It's a signature on a piece of paper. The statute really has no requirement whatsoever other than that the president do that. And then it gives him the authority to spend money. And by the way, you know, we spend, you know, north of $3 trillion a year. This figure is about $8 billion. So we're not talking about a massive sort of funding effort. We're talking about what in another context might be considered the day-to-day business of government.
So if you've just joined us, I'm Carmen LeBurge. You're listening to Mornings with Carmen. I am talking with Tommy Binion from Heritage. You can check out what they're doing at heritage.org. We are talking about the emergency declaration on the southern border. It really efforts to improve border security there, including some portions of construction of what we will broadly term a wall, although some of them might be partitions that don't necessarily look to all of us like a wall. So when the president actually made this declaration, Tommy, he actually predicted that it would end up in court. It now is certain that's going to happen as 16 state attorney generals have filed. I think it's unfortunate that every disagreement that we have ends up in front of a judge. Talk with us about why this is not how we should resolve our issues, ideally, and what kind of power this really does centralize in the judiciary.
Yeah, you know, this really isn't one of the checks or balances that we all learned about in Schoolhouse Rock in civics class in middle school. It isn't what the founders intended. Of course, each branch of the federal government, the Congress, the executive branch, the judicial branch, has a check. But the judicial branch wasn't meant to settle all disputes between any aspects of government. You know, the checks, as they're described in class in school, are various powers that one branch might have over the other. You know, in this case, the Congress gave the president this authority in a law passed under the Constitution. Of course, the judges are fine to have this power and often use it, I think, in an activist overreaching type of way. National injunctions, which have been used increasingly under President Trump, I think are extra unfortunate because, you know, it may be a judge with jurisdiction over a circuit or a region in the country, and that judge has the effect of creating a national law, which is very unfortunate. I think that there are other avenues to use. For instance, the Congress could repeal the statute that gave the president the authority to declare this national emergency and get the funding. But what he's done is entirely legal under the law that Congress passed. So it's not clear, by the way, that the court is going to stop this. It's not clear that why a state attorney general would have standing to sue the president. You know, in order to sue somebody in this country, you have to actually be harmed by an action that they've taken. It's not clear that the states would be harmed by this. It doesn't require any actions from the states. And so there may be a judge. If a judge, he or she, were following the proper protocol, they would throw this case out because the state attorney generals really have nothing to do with this action.
All right, Tommy Binion and I are going to continue our conversation in just a moment. We're going to look toward what's going on in D.C. related to Andrew McCabe. We are going to look at election 2020, at least a quick preview of it. All of that up next on Mornings with Carmen. Welcome back to Mornings with Carmen. I am continuing my discussion with Tommy Binion from Heritage. You can follow him on Twitter at TP Binion. Tommy, let's move to a conversation about what's going on in D.C. with Andrew McCabe. I would say it's Andrew McCabe v. Trump, but so for folks who don't know, Andrew McCabe made some accusations on a CBS 60 Minutes Sunday night program that are pretty astounding. So I'm just going to ask you, what did you hear? And should we believe what we're being led to believe? And if so, sort of how should we feel about it?
Well, there's one big accusation that's made a lot of news, and that is that there was some discussion of invoking the 25th Amendment to remove Donald Trump from office within the upper reaches of his administration. So that would be – so the 25th Amendment allows the cabinet – to remove a president from office in the event that he's unable to discharge the duties of the office. But in this case, the president is fully capable of discharging the duties of his office. What that would be is nullifying the results of the 2016 election. So, of course, it's an explosive news story. There was this story that Rod Rosenstein had begun this discussion and started – sort of asking around who would be interested amongst the cabinet in using this power that they had. And Rod Rosenstein denied that. He said that it was sarcastic. If he did say, if he did mention the 25th Amendment, it was only the use of sarcasm. And McCabe has said that it was much more realistic discussion than that. And then the other thing is that there's this implication. Of course, Russia has to come up in every one of these interviews. And there's this implication that Russia was involved in the firing of Jim Comey and that the president insisted that Russia make it into a memo concerning that firing. And it just has obviously set the media back to the Russia narrative. Of course, it was only last week that the Senate Intelligence Committee released the findings of their two-year-long investigation and found that there was absolutely no evidence of collusion between the Trump campaign, between the president and Russia in terms of their interference in our election. So it's just another instance in that story. I think it's helpful, though, one more point on this, to remember who Andrew McCabe is. He was the acting FBI director after Comey was fired. Attorney General Sessions had to fire McCabe earlier last year because of some criminal level leaks out of the FBI. It was only like I think one day before his scheduled retirement and his pension would kick in. So it was some pretty serious accusations against McCabe back then.
All right. And just to remind people, so the Attorney General is the head of the Department of Justice. What is the relationship between the Department of Justice and the FBI? Because we have Rod Rosenstein, who we just heard this morning, is going to be leaving the administration after serving for a couple of years. And he's in this mix as well. So we now have a new Attorney General and we have Rod Rosenstein on his way out. Just for those of us that aren't in Washington and don't do this every single day, remind us about those relationships.
Yeah, so the Attorney General is obviously appointed by the President and then confirmed by the United States Senate. That is the same track that an FBI director takes. They have to be appointed by the President and confirmed by the United States Senate. But the FBI in general is a division of the Department of Justice. That means the Attorney General would be the boss of the FBI director, right? The director has to report to the Attorney General, who has to report to the President. You know, Jeff Sessions was a great Attorney General. He left after the election. He was then replaced by an acting Attorney General, Matt Whitaker. And then just last week, the Senate confirmed Bill Barr to be the new Attorney General. So it's not entirely unusual that the Deputy Attorney General, Rod Rosenstein, would be leaving at this time. You know, this will be Bill Barr's first week on the job, so it's not unusual that he would be leaving, but he is implicated in this McCabe announcement, or McCabe admission, rather. McCabe says that Rod Rosenstein was going around the cabinet trying to figure out how many cabinet officials would be interested in invoking the 25th Amendment, and another way of saying that is in nullifying the 2016 election results within Donald Trump's own administration. If that happened, it's really stunning.
Absolutely. All right, Tommy, let's talk about the upcoming 2020 campaign. Bernie Sanders just announced this morning on Vermont Public Radio that he is throwing his hat into the ring. I don't think that's a huge surprise to anybody. We also learned yesterday that it looks like the California primary is actually going to open up in early voting prior to the Iowa caucus. That's probably going to make people in Iowa kind of mad. So, you know, talk about who's in already and who we ought to be watching.
Well, just the law of numbers, chances are there's four or five Democrat candidates for president listening right now. There's a whole lot of them. Many of them are U.S. senators. There is a divide in the Democratic Party that's being exposed here. There is a more rational, more moderate wing of the Democratic Party, and there are the Democratic Socialists. So you mentioned Bernie Sanders. There are, I think there were six presidential candidates who announced that they would co-sponsor the Green New Deal, or that they would endorse the Green New Deal, which I think can only be labeled a socialist proposal. So there's there's Kamala Harris, who's running. She's a senator. Cory Booker, who's running. He's a senator. Amy Klobuchar has now declared that she's running. Elizabeth Warren is running. So there's four U.S. senators right there. And I'm fairly certain that every one of those that I just named has endorsed the Green New Deal. Joe Biden is, of course, thinking about running. He would be the biggest name in the field. There's a rumor that he's hiring staff and really gearing up, but you never know about these things until they officially happen. But, we have the majority of the field, or, you know, a lot of candidates declared at this point, and there's still a year to go before they start the caucusing in Iowa, or a little less than a year before they start the caucusing in Iowa. So we're going to be treated to this Democratic primary that I think is going to get really nasty. There's going to be some gnashing of teeth. And the other feature of, I think, all primaries is that this one is a race to the left. It's how liberal, how progressive, how socialist can we be? And I don't think the country is going to be served very, very well by that phenomenon.
So, Tommy, we have a lot of listeners in Iowa. We've got signals in Iowa and a lot of folks in that state. And so let me just go ahead and give an invitation to all of our Iowa listeners. Tommy and I would love to hear from you this year in this lead up. And so you can always text me, 877-933-2484. You can email me, carmen@myfaithradio.com. You can hit Tommy up on Twitter, TP Binion. We really would love some on-the-ground insights from those of you who are directly, you know, engaged in these conversations on the ground in the great state of Iowa. Since you guys, you know, you're the first, you're out there first, and we all recognize it. Okay, Tommy, let's leave it right there. We look forward to talking with you again next week.
You bet. Have a great show.
All right. This is Carmen LeBurge. You are listening to Mornings with Carmen, and we got to take one little quick break, but then we'll be right back. Indeed, friends, this is the day that the Lord has made, and we will rejoice and be glad in it. We are going to be people of faith living in the midst of a world that is often very confused, not only about who God is, but about who we are as human beings and our place in God's redemptive plan. And so if you, let me just say this, if you need a copy of the Bible, like if that's just something you're currently living without, we want to put one in your hands. And so if you go to myfaithradio.com and you enter the drawing for the Bible that we're giving away this month, which is a Charles Spurgeon Truth for Life Study Bible, let me just encourage you to do that. Get your hands on the Word of God because it will literally transform your life. You're listening to Mornings with Carmen. I'm your host, Carmen LeBurge. Welcome back to Mornings with Carmen. I am your host, Carmen LeBurge. So we all recall the dot-com bubble in 2000, the housing bubble in 2007. Have you ever wondered what kind of bubble we might be on right now, if that bubble is poised to bust? What bubble might that be? Well, what if I told you that it's a currency bubble related to the emergence and proliferation of cryptocurrencies, or a combined real estate stock market bubble, or a combination of corporate, national, and personal debt alongside what looks like stagflation on the horizon globally? Would you say to yourself, wow, she seems to be really worried about some stuff? Well, what does all that mean, and what might happen, and how can we prepare? That's the bigger question. All of that up next with Bob Dickey of Bonvera. You are listening to Mornings with Carmen, and I'm your host, Carmen LeBurge.
The old phrase, actions speak louder than words, couldn't be more applicable than on our university campuses. This is Jim Garlow. A recent Wall Street Journal article reported that the University of California, Berkeley, is debating bringing in conservative faculty to broaden the spectrum of political discourse on campus. Pardon my skepticism, but it's difficult to imagine one of the most liberal campuses in the U.S. is putting free speech above political correctness. A professor of political science at Berkeley apparently agrees. In the article he quoted, there's a lot of embarrassment on campuses, so some kind of statement from the top might have good-sounding words, but actions speak louder than words. Jesus warned us to be as wise as serpents and gentle as doves, followed by, be on your guard. There's more at jimgarlow.com. Be prepared to live out your faith.
Welcome back to Mornings with Carmen. I am joined now by Robert Dickey. He goes by Bob. He is going to bring us up to speed on the coming economic bubble of everything. Bob, welcome to Mornings with Carmen.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on your program this day.
So you didn't really arrive with like a, you know, particularly sunny forecast. So when we talk about an economic bubble, let's just start with that. What do we mean?
Yeah, so there's an economic bubble right now that's kind of been percolating for quite some time. And a lot of the data that I'm going to share with you this morning comes from a number of hedge fund managers out of New York who deal with the ultra wealthy. So a typical client for some of these hedge funds would be someone who has at least $10 million in investable assets up to $100 million. And so that's their typical clientele. And so when I got a hold of this briefing that they were giving to these families and these individuals, sharing with them what was coming and how to prepare, I was like, I need to be able to start talking about this on Main Street with my friends and family and people that I'm interfacing with, because it was shocking for me. And, you know, I think you and I, we both grew up through the dot-com bubble of the 2000 era. and we experienced that wild roller coaster ride. Then we had a housing bubble and housing crisis in 2000, and everyone's like, wow, that's the, and they've termed that the GFC, the Great Financial Crisis. Well, after that, we went on the longest bull run in American history. A lot of it was fueled with quantitative easing. We hear about it, QE1, QE2, as the government was trying to gussy up the economy and to get it growing again. And all of that quantitative easing, all that capital that was injected into the markets have created multiple bubbles. So now that's why we're calling it the bubble of everything. And every single asset class that you look at, whether it's cryptocurrencies, real estate, stock market, auto loans, corporate debt, student loans, they're all at all-time highs. And so any one of those could trigger a decline. And just the experts are just saying, look, these are cycles that we naturally go through. We're going to have a decline. We're going to go into a period of decline like we've had in the past, a correction. And here are the things that we need to be focused on and be prepared for. Here's how, so what I'm trying to do is help the average American family make steps now, take steps now to be prepared so they're not caught by surprise.
Okay. So, Bob, let's talk through a few of these. I think the one that might be easiest for a lot of people to get at a personal level is this auto loan issue that a lot of folks are facing. So let's start with that one, and then let's back up to some of the larger ones that might be might feel less personal.
Yep, absolutely. So right now we have about $1.1 trillion in outstanding auto loan debts. And so and $23 billion of that are newly delinquent loans. So these are people who have they've missed multiple payments. Maybe they're already in collections, but there was a lot of easy money. Let's call it easy money for people to go out and buy those new vehicles. And a lot of those cars, we've seen these, the big trucks that we have driving around, vehicle prices have gone up. It was really easy for Americans to get into these very expensive vehicles. We've sold more of those since 2007 than ever before. And so now we have people who have financed these vehicles. And of course, a vehicle is a horrible investment. It starts to depreciate the moment we drive it off the lot. And now we've got folks that are driving these vehicles. They financed them for 60, 72 months. And that bubble is about to burst, right? So that those debts are starting to come due, and more people are having a hard time paying for that auto loan. So it's very reminiscent. It's very similar to the housing crisis that we had back in from 2004 to 2007, where there was a lot of easy money and people got into homes that they couldn't afford, and we saw what happened then. So people, experts are like, they're looking at this and they're saying, uh-oh, we've got a problem here.
But we have a real estate bubble again, but it's somewhat different. So talk about the real estate bubble, because it occurs to me, Bob, there's a lot of folks who, I just know an increasing number of people or seeming percentage of people who rent, they never actually buy a house. And so, I'm kind of wondering, like, are they buying cars instead of houses? Because at least then they feel like they own something that's high profile. But talk with us about the real estate bubble. Like, I know we can't necessarily get into the psychology of why everybody's doing what they do, but it does all seem connected.
It really is connected. And so there's, it's also connected to the global ecosystem. So we know that we're now living in a time where all of our economies are tied together to a global economy. And so whatever happens at different parts of the globe, it reverberates back to impact everybody. But if you kind of take a look at real estate prices in 2007, 2008, when the bubble popped, and you were to compare that to real estate prices today in all of our major metropolitan areas around the country, from New York to Atlanta, Dallas. I've got graphs on probably 20 key cities around the country, and they are higher. Those real estate bubbles and valuations in those key cities are higher today than they were back in 2007, 2008. Warren Buffett actually has an analysis that he runs for his company. They call it the Buffett Index. And when it gets to a certain point, he starts to pull out of the market. Because he feels that things are overvalued. And you can actually see that recently. He's been not investing, but actually putting cash on the sidelines and kind of pulling out of some of these asset classes. But many of the experts are saying, look, We've got a massive real estate bubble. It's greater than what it was back in 2007. So, and here's how it's connected to the global markets. So we've had an emerging market overseas that's been growing. But as we take a look at various crises that we've had, let's say in Latin America, we've had various issues in Africa, we've had issues in Europe, we've had issues with Russia, we've had issues with Asia. A lot of wealthy individuals and corporations in those particular areas, the safe store globally is still the United States. And so there's a lot of capital flight that's been coming from all of those countries, wealthy individuals coming into the U.S. And one of the ways in which they will invest their capital in the U.S. to keep it safe is to buy real estate. And so if you take a look at ports of call, Vancouver, Seattle, San Francisco, Los Angeles, New York, Miami, you take a look at the housing prices and the real estate values in those areas, like how in the world is it even possible that we could be at these all-time highs? Well, when you peel back the layers of the onion, what you see is that there is a ton, I mean, tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars of capital from overseas flowing in, and they're buying homes, they're buying condos, they're buying townhomes, and basically using it as a bank account to store capital here within the U.S. And so that's driving prices up as well.
All right, Bob, let's grab a second cup of coffee. And when we come back, let's talk about how we as, you know, citizens out here on Main Street, how we as middle America can prepare for these coming bursting bubbles. I'm Carmen LeBurge. You're listening to Mornings with Carmen.
Tiny bubbles.
Paul Perreault, that's a clever music to come back with, Tiny Bubbles.
Oh,
Paul Perreault is our producer. I'm also here this morning with Bob Dickey. He and I are talking about the economic bubble of everything upon which we are currently living. Bob, let's talk about how do we prepare? How do households, business owners, organizational leaders, churches, how do we prepare for what is a cyclical reality of economic bubbles?
Well, that is a great question. I'm glad you asked it, because the number one thing that we've got to do is to just be aware, right? So we can't be walking around with our heads in the sand, so to speak, or just thinking that this global expansion is going to continue and we're just in great times and nothing's going to happen. Being prepared and understanding that, look, the reality is that there's cycles, there's ups and downs, is the most important thing that we need to be aware. But then once we're aware, we can say, hey, look, now that we know that this is cyclical and that we're going to have another cycle, we don't need to be fearful. People who are unprepared will be hurt, but that's why we can craft plans and we can prepare. And there's great opportunity both in up economies and down economies for us to have. So the number one thing that I would say is, number one, be prepared, understand what's happening. Then let's take a look at the average American family needs to make sure that they are not taking on debt. I'm an advocate as for the former president of Crown Financial Ministries. We preach about the debt issues and the debt crisis that we have here within the U.S. And so American families really need to have a game plan if they're in debt, figuring out ways and they can get out of debt and not finance things like vehicles and things of that nature. But having a debt management program, you know, the debt snowball, so to speak, to reduce debts are absolutely critical. Then having a safety net, a savings account for emergencies, at least $1,000 in a checking account for those little emergencies that come up is very important. I mentioned auto loan debt, but obviously the big one that many of us many people face is credit card debt. So reducing those credit card debts and making sure that that's not something that we're getting saddled with. The other thing that I would highly recommend is if for those people who have been investing in this big bull market for such a long time, especially those folks who are nearing retirement, you should not be 100% exposed to the stock market and that type of volatility. So if all of your savings, if all of your net worth, if all of your retirement is tied up into the stock market right now, I would encourage you to get with your investment professional, the person who's been helping you, seek wise counsel. But I would recommend trying to minimize some of that exposure. I'm not saying pull out 100%. I'm just saying make sure that you have good, sound advice and investment professionals helping you, and maybe minimize some of the exposure you have to the stock market, as corrections are probably on the horizon. And then finally, one of the things that I learned through the last economic downturn in 2007, I was living in Flint, Michigan. It was the epicenter, right, of the crisis within the Midwest. I was watching factories close and people lose jobs. The families and the folks that I saw that weathered that storm very well had multiple streams of income. And so one of the things I'm a big advocate of is we've got a new economy that's growing up all around us. It's the gig economy, the freelancer economy, and there are so many ways in which people can have multiple streams of income. So making sure that you're not tied to just one source of income. But I mean, there's all sorts of things out there, from Upwork to Uber and Etsy and Airbnb, TaskRabbit, Fiverr. I mean, all sorts of businesses that offer income opportunities. It's one of the things that I'm doing at Bonvera. So I would highly encourage people to look at those options. And that's another way that they can prepare for the future.
So I think that when we have the term preparation, Bob, and we think about the Christian responsibility, not only to be prepared ourselves, but also to prepare for the fact that not everybody else is going to prepare. And that we would want to be in a position to help others, not just take care of ourselves. So I appreciate that you round all of this out with that call to be prepared, to be compassionate as well.
Yes, I find it. It's the greatest time and greatest opportunity for us to be able to step into a crisis in somebody's life when they're seeking, when they desperately need help. I mean, interestingly enough, I posted about this on Facebook last night. I mean, my greatest joy in life is when I'm able to find a way in which I'm able to help friends, family, and other people around me who are going through a crisis. And you know, I've had people do that for me multiple times. And so I think that we as Christians, I mean, we have to understand, I mean, you highlight at the top of the hour when you're talking about the good news of the gospel. I mean, that's what we carry with us every single day. And people who normally aren't looking, who might be on that treadmill of life, and they're just, you know, they've got the blinders on, it's like, you know, they're too busy. All of a sudden in a crisis, they're looking for an answer. They're looking for help. And that's where we can step in. We carry the good news. We can help somebody. And I saw all sorts of opportunity to serve and to help and to share the good news during the last economic crisis. And I think that we're going to get that in spades during this next downturn.
Thank you so much for being with us here today on Mornings with Carmen. If you guys want to check out what Bob is doing, is the best place for them to do that just to go to robertldickey.com, and then they can just connect with all your stuff?
It's robertdickey.com, absolutely. And then I'm also
I'm putting an extra letter in there.
robertdickey.com. And then I'm also on Twitter at robertdickey, and I love to engage with people and answer questions similar to you. And so I'll definitely be available on both of those platforms.
Thank you so much. We appreciate it, and we'll circle back with you in the future.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Carmen. Have a great day.
Thanks. You too. All right, let's grab another cup of coffee, and then I'll join you right back here on Mornings with Carmen. I'm Carmen LaBerge. Welcome back to Mornings with Carmen. I'm your host, Carmen LaBerge. So I'm just curious this morning, you know, what's on your heart? What's on your mind? What is either elevating your spirit, or what are you carrying around as a burden that the rest of us might help you shoulder, might help you bear? If you would text me your prayer concerns at 877-933-2484, I will certainly lift them up personally. I'm always a person who is interested in having other people pray for me. So please know that you are absolutely invited into my life in that way. I encourage you to be praying each and every day, not only for me, but for Paul, who produces this program, and for Faith Radio, that God would continue to use and bless this ministry. It is our 70th anniversary, It's not my 70th anniversary. It's not Paul's 70th anniversary, but it is the 70th anniversary of Faith Radio. And there's going to be a night of comedy with Bill Arnold and the original cast of Triple Espresso, celebrating the 70 years of radio ministry, launched by Billy Graham when he was the president of the University of Northwestern St. Paul. And we have the opportunity to celebrate that together. And so if you are in the Twin Cities area and you can be at the Night Performance Hall on the campus of the University of Northwestern in St. Paul, Minnesota at 7 p.m. on March the 16th, then you need to go to myfaithradio.com and get your tickets today. Because those tickets are going fast. All right, we have covered a lot in this hour. I'm always interested in getting your feedback, your reactions, your responses to what we're talking about here on air. So again, you can text me at 877-933-2484. You can always email me, carmen@myfaithradio.com, or you can hit me up on Twitter. I am at Carmen LaBerge. So a listener yesterday apparently missed the first hour of the program, and so asked a question in the second hour about, hey, why didn't you talk with so-and-so about Haiti? And I said, well, I actually talked about Haiti in the first hour with another guest. And so let me remind you, you can always go to myfaithradio.com. Mornings with Carmen has a page. You see the word podcast there. You can actually go back and listen or share any programs that you may have heard or you may have missed. You can also just subscribe to the podcast and then you never miss an episode. We would love for you to help us share what we're doing here on Mornings with Carmen to a wider audience, to your friends, to your neighbors, to folks in your church. We would very much appreciate that. So go to myfaithradio.com, Mornings with Carmen, click on the podcast and you can download it or you can share it with somebody else. All right. We've got a whole second hour right ahead. I am Carmen LaBerge. You are listening to Mornings with Carmen. Thanks for listening to this podcast of Mornings with Carmen LaBerge from Faith Radio. If you haven't, you can subscribe to automatically receive the podcast through iTunes or the Google Play Music app. That way, you never miss an episode. It's also available anytime at myfaithradio.com.